side of the street and fired. Sanchia's adrenaline was still running strong, so the world still seemed terribly slow and clear, every second sliding by like the slice of a razor. She watched the two men take positions on the roof, her eyes catching every gesture and movement. She knew there was no running from them, no shelter, no trick up her sleeve. She and Gregor were exposed in the alley, unarmed, with nowhere to run. Clef's voice roared in her ear. Touch me to the gravity rig! Now, now, now! Sanchia didn't stop to think. She ripped Clef off the string around her neck and stabbed him down to the bloody plates in her lap. Their attackers loosed their bolts. She watched helplessly as the scribed bolts leapt forth from their espringle pockets, like fish jumping out of the water to catch an unsuspecting fly. She felt metal strike metal as Clef touched the gravity plate. And then, a curious pressure fell across Sanchia's body, and her stomach fluttered unpleasantly, like she was falling again. But she was standing still, wasn't she? But then, everything seemed to be standing still. The bolts weren't flying forward anymore. They hung limply in the air. The attackers were like statues stuck to the walls. The hanging clothes were barely rippling anymore. A curl of a bedsheet hanging above the alley almost perfectly still, like icing on a cake. Sanchia looked around at the drifting world, dazed. What the hell? She was still touching Clef, and he was still stuck to the gravity plate, and she heard his voice whispering, speaking, chanting. She couldn't understand what he was saying, but she could tell he was doing something to the device. Then, she and Gregor slowly started to float off the ground, rising up as if they had no weight at all. She heard Gregor crying out, "What the devil?" Clef's chanting filled her ears. She dimly realized he was making the rig work for him, making it do something it was not meant to do, something it should have never been able to do. Because from what she'd seen that night, these gravity rigs only affected the gravity of the person wearing them. Yet Clef was now somehow using this rig to control the gravity of everything around them. Other objects began to float into the air, barrels and bags and fire baskets, and the body of one of their attackers, festooned with laundry. The two attackers on the walls began screaming in terror as they helplessly floated off the building fronts, slowly turning end over end. Clef's voice overpowered her thoughts, filling her mind. His strange chanting grew louder. How is he doing this? She thought. How can he possibly be doing this? Then her scar grew hot, and she heard something, smelled something, saw something. A vision. A vast, sandy plain. Tiny stars twinkling above. The sky at dusk, dark and purpled at the horizon. There was a man on the plain wearing robes, and in his hand, a wink of gold. He raised the golden thing, and then the stars began dying, one by one, snuffed out as if they were but candle flames. Darkness fell. Sanchia heard herself screaming in terror. The vision bled out of her mind, and the world returned to her, with Gregor and all the random objects floating in the muddy fairway, the barrels and the fire baskets and the bolts. She watched as the two bolts slowly, slowly flipped in midair, changing direction, so they pointed not at Sanchia and Gregor, but rather at the men who had fired them. The bolts trembled with pent-up energy. The men, realizing what was about to happen, shrieked in naked terror. Clef said a single word, and the bolts hurtled forward. They flew so fast they almost fell apart in the air. When the bolts struck the men, they punched through their bodies as if their ribs and stomachs were made of soft gelatin, shredding them effortlessly like scythes parting soft, green grasses. Clef's chanting halted. Instantly, Gregor, Sanchia, the floating corpses, and all the other levitating things in the fairway crashed to the ground. For a moment, they just lay there. Then Gregor sat up and peered at the bodies lying in the mud. They're dead, He looked at Sanchia.
How? How did you do that?
Sanchia's mind was still whirling, but she had wit enough to slip Clef up her sleeve before Gregor could see him.
Was that you, Clef? She asked him.
Clef was silent. Clef? Clef, are you there? Nothing. She looked at the gravity plates and saw the device was now melted and smeared, like Clef's manipulations had burned the thing out.
How did you do that?
Demanded Gregor again. For once, the captain looked genuinely shaken.
I don't know, she said.
You don't know?
No, she shouted. No, no, I don't even know if I did do that.
She sat there in the fairway, bewildered and exhausted. Gregor watched her, wary.
We've got to get out of here, she said wearily. There could be more of them. Last time they called in a whole damn army. There could...
She stopped talking as a black, unmarked carriage rattled into the fairway.
Shit, she sighed.
Gregor scrambled through the mud, grabbed his espringle, and pointed it at the carriage. But then he lowered it, surprised. The carriage pulled up in front of them. A young, rather pretty girl wearing gold and yellow robes peered out of the cockpit window.
Get in, Captain, she said.
Now. She looked at Sanchia.
You too.
Miss Berenice?
Said the captain, astonished.
Now means now, she said.
The captain hobbled around and started climbing in on the other side of the cockpit.
I'm not going to have to make you get in this thing, am I?
He asked Sanchia. Sanchia briefly calculated the risks. She had absolutely no idea who in the hell this girl was, but with the captain's bond still on her ankle, Clef suddenly dead and silent, and the whole of the commons suddenly deeply unsafe for her, she had few choices. She climbed in the back, and the carriage took off toward the Dandolo chartered Campo. Chapter 13 Sanchia sat huddled in the passenger seat, gripping her wrist where she'd hidden Clef. She stayed quiet. Her skull was pounding terribly, and she had no idea what in hell was going on. For all she knew, this girl was the queen of Tavan, and could have her head lopped off with but a word. She tugged at the bond on her ankle. It held fast, of course. She'd considered using Clef to undo it during the fight, but that would have tipped off the captain to the fact that she possessed something that could break scribed locks, so she'd refrained. She bitterly regretted the choice now. Gregor sat in the cockpit with the girl, wrapping up his injured arm. He peered up at the rooftops outside.
You saw them? He asked. The flying men?
I saw them, said the girl. Her voice was oddly calm.
They have spies everywhere, he said. Eyes everywhere.
Then he sat up.
Did you check this carriage? They put this thing on mine, this scribed button, so they could follow me. You should pull over now, and we should—
That won't be necessary, Captain, she said.
I am deadly serious, Miss Berenice, said Gregor. We should pull over now and look over every inch of this carriage.
That is not necessary, Captain, she said again. Please calm down. Gregor slowly turned to look at her.
Why?
She said nothing.
How did you happen upon us anyway?
He asked, suspicious. Silence.
They weren't the ones who put that button on my carriage at all, were they?
He asked.
It was you. You put it there.
She glanced at him as she piloted the carriage through the Dandolo southern gates.
Yes,
she said reluctantly.
Orso sent you to follow me, he said, as I went to catch the thief.
The girl took a long breath in and let it out. It has been, she said with a touch of fatigue, a very eventful evening. Sanchia listened closely. She still didn't understand what the hell they were talking about, but now it seemed to involve her. That was bad. She considered her options.
God damn it, Clef, wake up, she said.
But Clef was silent. If he was awake, she could pop the bond off her ankle and jump out of the carriage the first chance she got. She supposed she could dart Dandolo, or both of them, and steal the key to the bond. But she'd been in an out-of-control carriage once tonight, and had no desire to repeat the experience. And either way, both options left her abandoned on the Dandolo Campo, and without Clef, her life there wasn't worth a copper devat. So she stayed put and waited. An opportunity would present itself eventually, provided they all stayed alive.
"So it was Orso's box," he said, triumphant. "Wasn't it? I was right. He had you ship it into my waterfront under your name, didn't he? And he..."
He stopped.
"Wait. So if you put the scribed button on my carriage instead of our attackers, how did our attackers find us at all?"
"That's simple," said the girl. "They found you because they were following me." He stared at her.
"You, Miss Berenice. What makes you say that?"
She pointed up. Gregor and Sanchia slowly looked up at the ceiling.
"Oh,"
said Gregor quietly. The roof of the carriage sported three large, ragged holes, and one bolt point was lodged in it as well. "I assume you wondered why two of them split off from the main attack force," said Berenice. "They chased me for a block or so, but left when they heard the screaming." She glanced back at Sanchia. There was a lot of screaming, it seemed.
"What makes you so sure they were following you?"
said Gregor. "They certainly knew which carriage to shoot at," said Berenice.
"I see. But how did they know to follow you to begin with? Certainly they couldn't have followed you all the way from the inner Dandolo enclaves."
"I'm not sure yet," said Berenice. "But this was planned. They intended to kill all of us at once, I suspect. Everyone involved..." She trailed off.
"Involved with me," said Sanchia quietly. "With the box."
"Yes."
"Everyone involved," said Gregor. "Orso's back at the Campo?"
"Yes," said the girl. "So he should be safe." Gregor peered out the window.
"But if you go high enough over a Campo wall," he said, "you don't trigger any of its warding scrivings, do you?"
He looked back at Sanchia.
"That's what you did at the waterfront, correct?"
She shrugged. "Basically." He looked at Berenice.
"So, if you have a rig that can allow you to fly, you can sail right over all the Campo walls, and no one would ever know you'd done it."
"Damn," Berenice said quietly. She pressed the accelerating lever farther forward. The carriage sped up. Then she cleared her throat. "You back there," she said.
"Me?" said Sanchia.
"Yes, there's a bag at your feet. Inside is a strip of metal with two tabs at the ends. Let me know when you find it."
Sanchia rummaged around in the satchel in the passenger seat. She found the strip of metal quickly and recognized a few of the sigils on the back.
"Got it," she said. "It's twinned, isn't it?"
"It is," said Berenice.
"How'd you know that?" asked Gregor.
"I used a scribing like this to blow up your waterfront," said Sanchia.
Gregor scowled and shook his head.
"I need you to tear off both tabs," said the girl. "And then I need you to scratch a word on the back of it, not the side with the scribings. That'll ruin the rig."
Sanchia tore the tabs off. "Scratch something in it with, like, a knife?"
"Yes," said Berenice.
Gregor handed Sanchia his stiletto.
"What word?"
he asked. "Run."
Alone in his workshop, Orso Ignacio reviewed the ledger page he'd hidden among his scribing materials. He'd concealed it quite cleverly, he thought. Much like his door, he'd scribed the book to sense his blood, so that only he or someone with a lot of his blood could read it. The instant he touched a hand to the covers, a slot in the spine opened up,
and he could slip out the page hidden inside. A page that was covered with figures. Extremely bad figures, he now thought as he reviewed it. Amounts he'd pilfered from this department or that department. Jobs and tasks that had been paid for but did not really exist. Discovering any one of these figures would lead to serious charges, but discovering all of them. I got stupid, he thought, sighing. The idea of that key was too good. And now? Then there was a tinny ping noise from his desk. He sat up, dug through the papers, and found the twinned plate. One tab had popped off. He stared at it.
That means Dandolo has found the thief.
He watched the plate closely. Then, to his dismay, there was another ping. The second tab popped off.
Oh, shit, he moaned. Oh, God.
This meant that Dandolo had the thief, and the thief had the key. Which meant he was going to have to start calling in favors. Favors he desperately did not wish to call in. But before he could move, something strange happened. The plate twitched. He turned it over and saw that something was happening to the back. Someone was writing there, gouging letters deep into the metal, and it was not Berenice's clear, perfect script. This was harsh and jagged, and it spelled out one word. Run.
Run,
said Orso, perplexed. He scratched his head. Why would Berenice message him to run? He looked around his workshop, and he didn't see anything he needed to run from. There were his definition tomes, his scribing blocks, his test lexicon, and the open window on the far wall. He paused. He didn't remember opening the window. There was a creak from somewhere in his workshop. It was something akin to the creak of a floorboard as you walk across the room, but this did not come from the floor. It came from the ceiling. Orso slowly looked up. A man was crouched on his ceiling, in full defiance of gravity, dressed in black, wearing a black cloth mask. Orso's mouth dropped open.
What in it?
The man fell on him, knocking Orso to the floor. Cursing, Orso struggled to get up. As he did, the man calmly walked over to Orso's desk, snatched up his page of secret accounts, walked back, and kicked Orso in the stomach, hard. Orso collapsed again, coughing. Then his attacker slipped a loop over his head and pulled it tight around his neck. He gagged and his eyes watered. The man hauled him to his feet, the cord cutting into his windpipe, and whispered in his ear,
"How now, puppy? Don't struggle too much, eh?"
He jerked the cord back, and Orso nearly blacked out.
"Just come along, then. Come along."
His attacker shoved him toward the window, then ripped the cord hard, pulling Orso along like a dog on a leash. Orso clawed at the cord, coughing, but it was tight and ferociously strong. The man glanced out the window.
"Not quite high enough, is it?"
he mused aloud.
"We do want to make sure. Come along, Poppy."
Then, unbelievably, the man slipped out the window and stood on the side of the building as if it were the ground. He adjusted something on his stomach, nodded, and ripped Orso out after him. Sanchia stared as the carriage hurtled through the gates, one after the other. She realized, to her alarm, that they were careening into the deepest enclaves of the Dandolo Campo, where the richest, most powerful people resided. She'd never even dreamed she'd get into such areas, especially not under these circumstances. "There," said Berenice. "The Apatis building is just ahead." They peered through the front window of the carriage. A sprawling, elaborate three-story structure emerged from the rosy glow of the streets. It looked dark, yet peaceful, as most buildings would in the middle of the night.
"It doesn't look like anything's wrong," said Gregor slowly.
Then, something moved in the window on the third floor, and they watched, horrified, as a man in black climbed out the window, stood on the side of the wall, and hauled out a struggling human form, dangling from a rope of some kind by the neck.
Oh, dear, said Gregor.
Berenice shoved the acceleration lever forward, but it was too late. The man in black hopped up the wall and tugged the helpless person onto the roof.
No, said Berenice. No!
What can we do?
Asked Gregor.
The way up onto the roof is the South Tower. It'll take forever to get there.
Sanchia looked at the side of the building, thinking. Perhaps this was the opportunity she'd been waiting for. She was well aware she was now dealing with some powerful people, and she was at their mercy. Which she did not like one bit. It would be handy to put them in her debt.
So that's your guy, right? She asked. Or so, or whatever?
Yes, said Berenice.
The guy whose box I stole?
Yes, said Gregor.
And you want him to live?
Yes, said Gregor and Berenice at the same time.
Sanchia stuck Gregor's stiletto into her belt and tugged off both her gloves.
Pull up close to the corner of the building there, she said.
What are you going to do?
Asked Gregor. Grimacing, Sanchia rubbed her temple with two fingers. This would be too much, she knew.
Something real dumb, she sighed. I sure hope this asshole is rich.
Up, up, up we go, said the man.
He hauled Orso up over the edge of the roof, adjusting the device on his belly as he did. Then he dragged Orso across the roof to the east side of the building, which overlooked the square. The man dropped Orso and turned around.
Now don't get testy, Poppy, he said.
He kicked Orso in the stomach again. Orso curled up, whimpering, and barely noticed as the man slipped the loop off of his head.
Can't leave any evidence, dearie. He must be immaculate. Simply sparkling.
He walked around and kicked Orso again, rolling him toward the edge of the roof.
This will be handy,
said the man, pocketing Orso's page of accounts.
All your pilfered money, all for a key. Once everyone finds this, no one will suspect a thing.
He gave Orso another brutal kick, again pushing him toward the edge.
No, Orso thought. No!
He tried to fight, to grab hold of the roof, to push back against his attacker. But the blows kept coming, landing on his shoulder, his fingers, his stomach. Orso watched through teary eyes as the edge of the roof came closer and closer.
A bitter old screw,
said the attacker with savage relish.
Deep in debt.
Another kick.
In over his head.
Another kick.
A dumb bastard who has thoroughly shat where he ate.
He paused to position the final blow.
Who'd be surprised to think you'd go and kill yourself?
Then, someone small and dressed in black came sprinting down the edge of the rooftop and tackled the man, knocking him to the ground. Gasping, Orso looked up and watched as the two people in black wrestled. He had no idea who this new arrival was. It appeared to be a small, bloody, and somewhat dirty-looking young woman. But she tore into the man with savage intensity, slashing at him with a stiletto. Yet the man was far more skilled in combat. He rebounded quickly, dodging her attacks and managing to land a fierce blow on her chin, knocking her to the side. She coughed and cried, "Dandolo, are you scrumming coming or not?" Orso's attacker dove at the woman hard enough that the two rolled over and over again, tumbling right toward... Orso watched as they rolled close.
Oh, no, he whispered.
The two combatants knocked him toward the edge. He felt numb and slow and stupid as his body tipped over. He reached out frantically, scrabbling for a handhold, and then his fingers finally found purchase on the edge. Orso let out a rather undignified shriek as he dangled from the edge of the roof. The man and the young woman were just above him, almost on top of his fingers, wrestling and clawing at each other. Orso's attacker finally overpowered the young woman and climbed on top, fingers around her throat, clearly intending to choke her to death, or throw her off the roof, or both.
Stupid little whore,
the man whispered. He leaned down on her throat.
Just a bit more. Just a bit more.
The young woman, gagging, clawed at the device on his stomach, twisting and turning it. Then something on the device slid into place. The man froze, horrified, let her go, and looked down. And then he simply erupted. Or so nearly let go of the roof in shock as the blood rained down on him in a hot wave. It stung his eyes and spattered into his mouth, a coppery, saline taste. If he had not been terrified, he would have been unspeakably disgusted. "Ah, shit," said the young woman, sputtering and coughing. She tossed away some remnant of the dead man, something akin to two plates held together with cloth. "Not again!" "Help!" stammered Orso. "Help! Help!" "Hold on, hold on," she said. The young woman rolled over, wiped her hands on the roof. Her clothing was not an option, as it was just as bloody as her palms, and grabbed his wrists. With surprising strength, she hauled him up and dumped him onto the roof. Orso lay on the roof, gasping in pain and horror and confusion, and staring up at the night sky.
"What? What? What was..."
The young woman sat next to him, heaving with exhaustion. She looked terribly ill. "Captain Dandolo's on his way up. Idiot is probably still looking for the stairs. You're Orso, right?" He looked at her, still shocked.
"What? Who?"
She nodded at him, panting. "Come, Sanchia." Her face went slack, and she suddenly vomited onto the side of the roof. She coughed and wiped her mouth. "I'm the one who stole your shit." Sanchia turned her head and vomited again. It felt like her brain was burning up. She'd pushed herself much too far tonight, and her body was breaking down. She lugged the man to his feet and limped with him across the roof. He was shaking, blood spattered, and he kept coughing and gagging after what the cord did to his throat. But he still looked better than she felt. Her skull was fire, and her bones were lead. If she managed to stay conscious, she'd count herself lucky. She felt herself getting weaker as they hobbled over the peaks. The door to the south tower opened, and light spilled across the red tile rooftop. The blade of light was a golden, buttery smear in the dark, and no matter how hard she blinked, she couldn't focus on it. She realized her vision was blurred, like a drunk's. The man, or so, seemed to be saying something to her, but she couldn't understand it. This startled her. She knew she was doing bad, but not that bad. "I'm sorry," she mumbled. My head really... She felt herself listing to the side and knew that she needed to get the man away from one of the peaks because she was about to collapse. She got him to a decently flat part, then let go of him and knelt to the ground. She knew she didn't have long. She fumbled for Clef, slipped him out of her sleeve, and stuffed him deep into her boot. Maybe they wouldn't think to look there. Maybe. Then she leaned forward until her forehead touched the roof. Things went dark. Chapter 14.
"Say we just haul her out and dump her somewhere. She might have done us all a favor and up and died."
"She's not dead, and she saved your life."
"So what? She also robbed me and burned down your damned waterfront." "God, I'd never have imagined the fabled lone survivor of Dantua could be so soft."
"She is the only person who could possibly know who's behind all this. I doubt if you know much or so. From the looks of things, you've just been up here panicking."
"I don't need this shit. She's a blood-spattered, grimy girl in my office. I could have the house guard come in and arrest her if I wanted."
"If that happened, then they would ask me questions, and I would be obliged to answer them, Hippotas."
"Oh, son of a bitch."
Sanchia felt consciousness flickering somewhere in the hollows of her head. She was lying on something soft, with a pillow under her head. People were talking around her, but she couldn't make sense of it. The fight on the rooftop was a handful of broken moments scattered through her mind. She picked through each one, trying to fit them together. There was a man on the roof of a campo building, she thought, about to be killed. Then she heard them, thousands and thousands and thousands of hushed, chattering voices. Scrivings. More scrivings than I've ever been around. Where the hell am I? She cracked an eye and saw a ceiling above her. It was an odd thing to think, but it was undoubtedly the most ornate ceiling she'd ever seen in her life, made of tiny green tiles and golden plaster. She glimpsed movement nearby and shut her eye all the way again. Then she felt a cold rag being pressed against her head. She felt the rag speak to her, the cool swirl of water, the twist of so many fibers. It pained her greatly in her weakened state, but she managed not to flinch. "She's got scars," said a voice nearby. "A girl's. Berenice's? Lots of them."
"She's a thief," said a raspy man's voice.
She'd heard it on the rooftop, she remembered. That must be Orso.
"Probably a hazard of the damned job."
"No, sir. This looks more like surgery. On her skull." There was a silence.
"She climbed the side of this building like a monkey in the canopies," said Gregor's voice quietly. "I've never seen anything like it. And she says she can hear scrivings."
"She said she what?"
said Orso.
"What rot? That's like saying you can taste a goddamn sonata. The girl must be a raving loon."
"Maybe, but she knew where those men in the gravity rigs were. And there was something she did with one of the rigs. I doubt if even you've ever seen anything like it. She made it..."
Sanchia realized she needed to stop this line of discussion. Gregor was about to describe Clef's trick with the gravity plates. And Orso, apparently, was the man who'd owned, or at least tried to own, Clef. So he might be able to identify what he could do, which meant he might hear Gregor's story and realize Sanchia was still walking around with him. She sucked in a breath, coughed, and started to sit up.
"She wakes," said Orso's voice sourly. "Oh, goody."
Sanchia looked around. She was lying on a sofa in a large and dazzlingly sumptuous office. Rosy, scribed lights flickered along the walls. A huge wooden desk stretched along one half of the room, and every inch of the walls was covered in shelves and books. Sitting behind the desk was the man she'd saved, Orso, still stained with blood, though his throat was black and blue under the dried gore. He was glaring at her over a glass of bubble rum, an outrageously expensive liquor she'd stolen and sold before, but never tried. The gravity plates from the man who'd exploded on the roof sat on the desk before him, crusted with blood. Gregor Dandolo stood next to him, arms crossed, one forearm wrapped in bandages. And beside her, on the sofa, sat the girl, Berenice, who watched everything with a calm look of detached bemusement, as if this were all a birthday party entertainment gone thoroughly awry.
"Where the hell am I?" asked Sanchia.
"You're in the Dandolo Campo Inner Enclaves," said Gregor. "In the Hepatis building. It's a sort of research build-"
"I know what the goddamn Hepatis does," said Sanchia. "I'm not an idiot."
"No," said Orso. "Stealing my box was very much an idiot thing to do. That was you, yes. Can we cop to that?"
"I stole a box," said Sanchia, "in a safe. I'm only just now figuring out who you are." Orso scoffed.
"You're either ignorant or a liar. So, it's Sanchia, is it?"
"Yeah."
"Never heard of you. Are you a canal operator?" asked Orso. "What house do you work for?"
None.
An independent, eh?
He poured another glass of bubble rum and tossed it back quickly.
I never did much canal work on other houses, but I understood the independence didn't last long. About as reusable as a wooden knife. So, you must be good if you're still breathing. Who was it? Who hired you to steal from me?
She said she doesn't know, said Gregor.
Can't she speak for herself?
Said Orso. Gregor glanced at Orso, then Sanchia. Let's find out. Sanchia, do you know what was in the box? At that, Orso froze. He glanced at Berenice, then stared resolutely at the floor. Go on, said Gregor. I already told you, said Sanchia. My client said not to open the box.
That is not an answer, said Gregor.
It's what they said.
I don't doubt that.
He turned back to Orso.
I doubt if you find that odd either, Hippotas. Because these criminals knew, just as you did, that its contents were occidental, weren't they?
Even though he was covered in blood, Sanchia could see Orso going pale.
What? What do you mean, Captain?
He asked.
I will dispense with all pretenses, said Gregor, sighing. I've neither the time nor the energy for them.
He sat in a chair opposite Orso.
You broke my mother's ban on the purchase of occidental items. You tried to buy something valuable. This item was stored at my waterfront, for it could not be stored at the Dandolo Campo. While it was there, young Sanchia here was hired to steal it. Her partner, Sark, dutifully passed it along to their client and was murdered for his troubles. And since then, this person has tried to kill anyone who's had the remotest of interactions with that item. Sanchia, you, Berenice, and me. And I suspect that such efforts will not end tonight, because the item must be incredibly important. As occidental tools generally are. After all, they say Chrysides built his own god out of metals and stones, and a tool that could do that would be beyond value. Yes.
Orso started rocking back and forth.
What was in the box, Orso? Asked Gregor. You need to tell me. It appears our lives depend on it.
Orso rubbed his mouth, then suddenly turned to Sanchia and spat.
Where is it now? What did you do with it, damn you?
No, said Gregor.
First, tell me what could be so valuable that it drove someone to try to kill us all tonight.
Orso grumbled for a moment. Then he said,
It was a key.
Sanchia did her utmost not to emote, but her heart was suddenly thrumming. Or maybe she should emote, she thought. She tried her best to look confused. Gregor raised an eyebrow.
A key. Yes, a key, just a key, a golden key. And did this key do anything?
Asked Gregor.
No one knew for certain. Grave robbers tend to lack the proper testing experience, you see. They found it in some giant, musty, collapsed fortress in Viotto. It was one of several occidental tools they and the pirates and all the rest discovered.
You'd already tried to purchase one such tool, hadn't you? Asked Gregor.
Yes, said Orso through gritted teeth. I assume your mother told you about that. It was something like a lexicon, a big, ancient box. We paid dearly for it, and it vanished between Vialto and here.
How dear is dearly? Asked Gregor.
A lot.
Gregor rolled his eyes and looked at Berenice. 60,000 devats. Said Berenice quietly.
Sanchia coughed.
Holy shit.
Yes, said Orso. Hence Ophelia Dandolo's frustration. But the key, it was worth trying again. There are all kinds of stories about the Hierophants using scribed tools to navigate the barriers of reality. Barriers we ourselves barely understand.
So you just wanted to make more powerful tools, said Gregor.
No, said Orso. Not just. Listen, when we inscribe an item with sigillums, we alter its reality, as anyone knows. But if you wipe the sigillums away or move beyond a lexicon, then those alterations vanish. The Occidentals not only developed tools that didn't need lexicons, when the Occidentals altered reality, it was permanent.
Permanent? Said Sanchia.
Yes. So, say you have a scribed hierophantic tool that, can make a stream burble up from the ground. Sure, you'd need sigillums to make the tool, but if you use the tool on the ground, then that water is there forever. It will have edited reality in a direct, instantaneous, and everlasting fashion. Supposedly, the Wand of Chrysides could unthread reality and tie it all back together again, if the stories are to be believed.
Whoa, said Sanchia quietly.
Whoa is right, said Orso.
How is that possible? Asked Gregor.
That's one of the giant goddamn mysteries I was trying to solve, said Orso. There are some theories. A few hierophantic texts call the basic sigils we use the Lingai Torora, the language of the earth, of creation. But the Occidental sigils were the Lingai Divina, the language of God.
Meaning? Said Sanchia.
Meaning, our sigils are the language of reality. Of trees and grass and, hell, I don't know, fish. But Occidental sigils are the language God used to fashion that reality. So, use God's coded commands, and reality is your plaything. Still just a theory. The key would have helped me figure out how true all that was.
Claff, said Sanchia, are you hearing this?
But Claff remained silent, stuffed down the side of her boot. She wondered if his efforts had broken him, just as her own had almost broken her tonight.
But the key was stolen as well, said Gregor.
Well, originally I thought the damned thing had gotten burned to bits in the waterfront fire.
He scowled at Sanchia.
But the fire was you as well?
Sanchia shrugged. Shit got out of hand.
I'll say, said Orso. But what happened next? What did you do with it?
Sanchia then reiterated the story she'd told Gregor, bringing it to the fishery, Sark's death, the fight, the escape.
So you gave it over, said Orso.
I did, she said.
And your Sark said he suspected founder lineage behind this.
It's what he said.
Orso looked at Gregor.
I might be founder lineage, said Gregor, but I think we can count me out, yes? That's not what I was looking at you for, idiot, snapped Orso. Do you believe her or not?
Gregor thought about it.
No, he said. I don't, not entirely. I think there's something she's not telling us.
Shit, thought Sanchia.
Have you searched her? Said Orso.
Sanchia's heart leapt in her chest.
Shit.
I've not had the time, said Gregor. Nor am I, willing to submit a woman to my touch without her consent.
Orso rolled his eyes.
Oh, for the love of God, Berenice, would you please search Miss Sanchia here for us?
Berenice hesitated. Really, sir?
You've already been shot at, said Orso. So you know this won't be the worst thing to have happened to you tonight. Just wash your hands well afterwards.
He nodded at Sanchia.
Go on, stand up.
Sighing, Sanchia stood and raised her arms above her head. Berenice quickly patted her down. She was about a head taller than Sanchia, so she had to stoop to do it. She paused at Sanchia's hips and pulled out the last remaining stun bomb, a handful of old lockpicks, and nothing else. Sanchia tried to suppress the relief in her face. Thank God she didn't make me take my scrumming boots off. That's it, said Berenice as she stood. The girl turned away quickly, but oddly enough, she was blushing. Gregor looked at Sanchia hard.
Really?
He said.
Really,
said Sanchia, with as much defiance as she could muster.
Terrific, said Orso. So we have a thief with a dull story and no treasure. Is there anything else? Anything else?
Sanchia thought rapidly. She knew there was quite a lot more. The problem was what to keep and what to give up. Her current problem was that despite saving Orso's life, her own still offered no value to these men. One bore the authorities assigned to him by the city. The other carried with him all the privileges of the merchant houses. And she was just a commons thief who, as far as they were aware, no longer possessed the treasure everyone was seeking. Either one of them could have her killed if they wished. But she knew things they didn't, and that was worth something.
There's more, she said.
Is there? Asked Gregor.
You omitted something from what you told me?
Yeah, she said. I didn't tell you the part about how my client is the one who shut down all the scrivings in the commons. The room fell silent. Everyone stared at her.
What? Sputtered Orso. What do you mean?
Your client, said Gregor.
Yeah, said Sanchia. One man did all that? Asked Gregor.
Yeah, said Sanchia.
Yeah, said Orso, exasperated. You can't say something like that and then just keep saying yeah.
Yes, please explain yourself, said Gregor.
She told them about the escape, how she'd fled the fisheries and hidden in the greens, omitting, of course, the bit about how Clef had helped her. And then she told them about the Campo man and his odd golden pocket watch. Orso raised his hands, shaking his head.
Stop! Stop! This is insane! You're telling me your client used one device, just one, and it somehow dampened or negated all the scrivings in the greens and foundry side and half a dozen other places to boot?
Basically, said Sanchia.
One button, and all the commands and all the bindings and all the etchings just stopped?
Basically. He laughed.
It's madness! It's idiotic! It's...
It's like the Battle of Armiades, said Berenice suddenly.
Eh?
Said Orso.
What? What's that?
She cleared her throat. The Battle of Armiades, from the Occidental Empire. Long, long ago, there was a giant fleet of scribed ships threatening to overthrow the Empire. The Hierophants met the fleet with but one boat, but that boat had a weapon on it. And when this weapon was used, all the ships
simply sank to the bottom, said Orso slowly. That's right. I remember now. When did you learn about that, Berenice?
When you made me read those 18 tomes of Hierophantic history while we were negotiating with our people in Vialto.
Ah, now that I think about it, it seems a bit cruel that I made you do that, Berenice.
That is because it was, sir. She turned, looked at a bookcase behind her, and found one huge tome. She hauled it out, flipped it open, and scanned the lines. Here's the passage. But by focusing the influences of the Imperiat, the Hierophants were able to wrest control of all the sigillums of their foes and discard them as if they were chaff among the wheat. And so the king of Cambyseus and all his men sank to the bottom of the bay and drowned and were never heard from again. She looked around at them. That description always puzzled me. But if they were describing an actual tool, it might make sense. Orso cocked his head and half-closed his eyes. By focusing the influences of the Imperiat... So, it doesn't say if it looks like a big weird pocket watch? Asked Sanchia. Because what I saw looked like a big weird pocket watch.
It doesn't, said Berenice. But if the key survived, then I suppose other tools could have as well.
How does knowing this help us? Asked Gregor.
It doesn't, said Sanchia. But I saw him. I saw his face. And he's got to be the man running the whole crew. From the men who ambushed me at the fishery to the ones who tried to kill us just tonight. If this gold pocket watch, this Imperiat, if that's the word for it, if it's anything like the key, he probably spent fortunes getting it. You don't hand that off to your lieutenant. You keep it in your own damn pocket. So that must have been him.
What did he look like, Sanchia?
Asked Gregor. Like Campo sort, said Sanchia. Clean, clean skin, clean clothes, proper clothes. Like you, I guess, she said, pointing at Berenice. Not like you, she said to Orso.
Hey, said Orso, offended. What else? Said Gregor.
Tall, she said. Curly hair, stooped posture, an indoor man for indoor work. Measly beard, but he didn't have a logotipo or crest or anything so simple.
That is a vague description, said Gregor. I suspect you will now say that if you saw him, you'd recognize him, which would be useful for you, since we'd then need to look after you.
If I had more, I'd tell you more, said Sanchia.
But it could be anyone, said Orso. Any house, Morsini, Michiel, Candiano, or even our own, I suppose. And we've no way of winnowing down our options.
The gravity rig doesn't tell you anything, Orso?
Asked Gregor.
No, said Orso. Because that thing is some unprecedented, groundbreaking work. It's some truly genius shit of a kind I've never seen before. Whoever's made this rig has been keeping their talent a dead secret, it seems.
At that, Berenice cleared her throat. There is another unanswered question, sir. Whoever this man is, how did he find out about the Occidental Lexicon? About the key, about Captain Dandolo going to capture Sanchia, and my following them. How did he know all that?
That's like six unanswered questions, said Orso. And the answer is simple. There's a leak, or a mole, or a spy somewhere here on the Campo.
Berenice shook her head. We only talked about the key to each other, sir. And there was no one around when you told me to follow Captain Dandolo just today. But there is a commonality, sir.
There is, said Gregor.
There is. They all took place in the same location. Your workshop.
So, said Orso.
Berenice sighed. She then reached into a desk, produced a large sheaf of paper, dipped a pen in some ink, and then drew at least 20 elaborate, complicated, beautiful symbols onto the paper. Dazzlingly, dazzlingly fast. It was like a party trick, effortlessly creating these gorgeous designs in the blink of an eye. Berenice showed the piece of paper to Orso. They had no meaning to Sanchia, but he gasped at the sight of it.
No,
he said. I think so, sir, she said. He turned
and stared at his workshop door, his jaw slack.
It couldn't be.
What just happened? Asked Gregor. What is that you drew there, Berenice?
An old scribing problem, said Berenice. An incomplete design, created to make students wonder, how do you make a rig that captures sounds of the air?
Someone solved it, said Orso faintly. It's a rig.
A rig! It's all just a rig, isn't it?
I suspect so, sir, said Berenice. A device, a secret one, planted in your workshop, that somehow reports our conversations.
For once, Gregor and Sanchia seemed to be on the same side. Both of them glanced at each other, bewildered.
You think a rig is spying on you? Said Sanchia.
Isn't that impossible? Said Gregor.
I thought scribing mostly moved things around or made them light or heavy.
That's true, said Berenice. Scribing is good at big, simple processes, huge exchanges done on a grand scale. It makes things get fast, get hot, get cold. But little things, delicate things, complicated things, those are trickier.
Trickier, said Orso, but not impossible. A sound rig, one that makes or captures noise, is a favorite theory problem for scribers to toy with, but no one's ever actually done it.
But if these people have scribed gravity, said Berenice, looking at the plates on Orso's desk, who knows what other barriers they've broken?
Assuming they could make such a rig, how could they get it in there?
Asked Gregor. They can fly, asshole, said Sanchia. And this place has windows.
Oh, said Gregor. Right. Still, said Berenice, this is all just a theory I have. I could be totally wrong.
But if my client did put that thing in there, said Sanchia, now we just go in and get it, right? And then, I don't know, smash it or something, yeah?
Think, said Orso. If the rig were obvious, we'd have already spotted the damn thing.
We've no idea how such a rig would even look, said Berenice. It could look like anything. A plate, a pencil, a coin. Or it could be hidden in the walls or floor or ceiling.
And if we go digging around for it and they hear us, said Orso, then we'll have given the game away.
Gregor looked at Sanchia.
But, Sanchia, you can hear scribings, can't you?
The room went quiet.
Said Sanchia. Yeah.
Of course it had been Clef, who'd heard the gravity rigs converging on them before. Sanchia had just told him a half-truth. It was getting hard to keep up with all her lies.
So you can just go into the workshop and listen for it, yes?
Said Gregor.
Yes, can't you?
Said Orso, sitting forward. He was looking at her a little too intensely.
I can try, said Sanchia, but there's a lot of noise around here.
This was true. The campo was echoing with whispered commands, muttered scripts, quiet chanting. Every once in a while they would spike, growing loud as some vast, invisible infrastructure performed some task, and her brain could hardly bear it.
Is there? Demanded Orso. And how can you hear this noise? How does this process work?
It just does. You want my help or not?
That depends on whether you can actually give it.
Sanchia didn't move.
What's the problem here?
Asked Orso.
You go look, you find, that's it, right?
Sanchia looked around at them.
If I do this, I'm not going to do it for free.
Oh, fine, said Orso dismissively. You want money? I'm sure we can work out some kind of arrangement. Especially because I'm convinced you'll fail.
No,
said Gregor.
Orso can promise you money all he likes.
But he is not the person you are bargaining with. That would be me.
He held up the